I am fantasy author L. Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes at an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, April 27th, 2019, and this is episode 11 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. I apologize if the audio quality is not up to snuff. I'm once again in a hotel room, this time in Florida. By the time this goes out on Monday, I'll be making my way back to Maryland after the weekend here. But I will try to clean up the audio as much as possible. So sorry again. Next week I should be home and back in my home studio. So this week's best thing was Avengers Endgame, of course. So initially, you know, since if you listen to the podcast, you know, I'm not always on social media. I do try to pop in at least once a day on all my various accounts, but especially this close to, well, this was a couple of weeks ago, a couple months ago, maybe. I don't know. Whenever the Avengers Endgame tickets went on sale, I didn't know that it was happening until, like, I popped on social media around noon and I saw someone's Instagram story about waiting in line on one of the, apps, I guess, where you buy them. And I was like, oh, you can buy them? Well, let me try. Of course, I tried and it was noon. And so I was waiting in line on Fandango. And then I decided to try to go directly to the Regal app or the AMC app because those are the two closest theaters to me. Long story short, it took several browsers and a phone and like a half an hour and I couldn't buy any tickets. And then I realized, I was trying to buy tickets for Thursday night at home because we were flying out Friday and I couldn't do that. But I was like, well, maybe we can see it over the weekend when we're in Florida. So I was able to get tickets for Saturday. And then a couple of days ago, I think it was like Thursday or Wednesday, I got an email from Fandango saying, oh, tickets opened up, there's extra showings. So I was able to buy a ticket for Thursday at 6 p.m., which was right before we left. So we saw it on Thursday. And no spoilers, but it's amazing and you have to go see it. And it's even better if you've seen every single one of the Marvel movies over the past 10 years, which we have. And we had just watched Infinity War again on Wednesday. So it was fresh of mind. The only thing I will say is that if you haven't seen it yet, and if you're not a huge Marvel movie fan, then I would recommend at least seeing Ant-Man and the Wasp, and of course Infinity War, before seeing Endgame. Because I know a lot of people skipped out on the Ant-Man movie, but I think it's pretty important, and I wonder if people who haven't seen Ant-Man, if they even understand certain things that are happening. But that movie, it gave me life. It was great. I texted my friends afterwards, and I was like, I feel like I could run a marathon because it actually gave me energy. It was like the Audra McDonald show. It's like some things that are invigorating and inspiring creatively. Just great storytelling, I thought. So definitely this week's best thing. Followed closely behind by this little mini vacation that we're on. We don't take a lot of vacations and my husband doesn't really like the beach, but I had a very strong urge to go to the beach. And I realized that the timing is less than spectacular because my book is due on Wednesday, but I was working on the beach because usually when I go to the beach, I don't swim or anything. Like I'll get in the water and splash or something, but I'm not a swimmer and people don't really swim at the beach anyway. I don't need to tan necessarily, but I just like going out there because it's relaxing. And usually I just read. So either bring a book or usually my Kindle and spend as much time as possible before I get exhausted from being in the sun, reading and relaxing. So today I printed out part of the book that I'm working on, but I still haven't finished all of the epigraphs yet. So I was working on those in my notebook, writing them by hand on the beach, it actually worked out pretty well. I don't write by hand almost never because my hand gets very tired. People who write by hand, I'm always amazed at them. Like I can write a diary entry by hand, but by the end, if I have a lot to say, my hand is hurting and cramping up. And so everybody who writes, you know, novels by hand, you know, hats off to you because couldn't be me. I type so much faster than I write by hand. I type almost as fast as I can think. And, which just works out better for me. But I was not about to take my laptop on the beach. So I have 14 left at the beginning of the day. And I wanted to get at least half of them done, which I did. I got 8 done. and I could probably finish them either this afternoon or tomorrow morning, which would be good. And I'm also going through reading the printed out version. I was doing that on the plane ride, correcting it, and I want to finish that by tomorrow, enter all the changes in Monday, maybe Tuesday if it takes me a little bit longer, and hopefully it'll be Monday so I can just have Tuesday to wrangle with Scrivener. Even though I have my Scrivener presets done, and Scrivener is the application, the program that I use to write, which is wonderful, highly recommended, but you do have to allot at least an hour of your time to exporting it. Not every time, because I do have a preset that I use, but even with the preset, it takes a little bit of wrangling to get it the way that I want it. So that'll be Tuesday, and then hopefully I'll just send it in on Tuesday and be done. So the epigraphs that I decided on, and you know, since I'm almost done with them, I'm very confident about this. It's going to be two letters. The first letter is the first 35 or 36 chapters, and then there's another letter for the last 14 chapters or so. And I was not able to keep it ambiguous, but I still, tidy minor spoiler, not really, for the epigraphs of Cry of Metal and Bone. The epigraphs are a letter from one character to another, and I'm hoping that the reader will start out with them, if they're thinking about them at all, thinking they're from one character, and then realize partway through that that doesn't make that much sense, and then I do reveal that he signs the letter. I do reveal what character it is, and hopefully that's like an aha moment. And it serves the story in a couple of ways. It allows me to get into the head of a character who you see in this book, but becomes more important in the fourth book and in the third novella. And it still allows me to do what I think the epigraphs are supposed to do, which is, you know, additional world building and leading you into the chapter. So even though it's a letter, I do try really hard to make sure that the tone is, you know, fits with the chapter, which I think I said before. Sorry if I'm repeating myself. But yeah, so those have been cool to write. Still a little tough, like not as tough as the epic poem that I wrote for Whispers of Shadow and Flame, but making it cohesive, making it in his POV, and this is a character I haven't written a POV for before, and yeah, so I like them though. Like I had only printed out part of the book, the first 35 chapters that have epigraphs while I was writing the last ones, so that I could read it through as a reader with the epigraph, you know, getting the vibe and the feeling of the chapter. And I don't know what chapter, I'm almost done with this, the first 35, so feeling good about it, feeling good about the whole thing. Even the issues that my brother had raised that I couldn't solve. I see what he's saying, but I still think it works the way it is. I don't feel bad about not being able to have time to really address them in a significant way. I'm trying to add a few lines here and there to clarify some things, but at least for me, it's working. So we'll see what my editor has to say when she sees it. So that's all been good, and I'm kind of zen about the whole thing, and especially doing work editing on the beach, you know, it's super relaxing, even with other people there. There was a lady who came in. They came through, set up their chairs right in the front, and then just put on some music and, like, a speaker. And I was like, but anyway, I put my headphones in, even though I would rather have listened to the water. I put my noise-canceling headphones in and some white noise, because I wasn't in the mood to listen to music, and I was writing anyway. I can't really listen to music in a significant way when I'm writing, so white noise it was. I could have used Coffeetivity, but I didn't. I just used the white noise app and went about my business. So the other thing I wanted to talk about was a really, really beautiful blog post by an author, the author Angelina Lopez. So she's my agency sister. We share an agent, Sarah Megabo. And I met Angelina somewhere. Where were we? Last RWA, maybe? That sounds right. and she's great. She's fantastic. And she just announced her first deal. Her book is coming out sometime next year, maybe. And so I think after I met her, I subscribed to her newsletter. And she was still pre-published. And so I'm always because I do websites and because I actually do some teaching about websites for authors, I'm always interested in what pre-published authors are doing and ways to give them advice about their, you know, web presence and things like that. And she was an example of someone who was doing it really well, in my opinion. So she was asked to give the closing inspirational speech at the Washington Romance Writers Retreat a few weeks ago. And so her blog post, which I will link to in the show notes, it's her website is angelinamlopez.com. It's just this really beautiful story about her being asked to give this inspirational speech during the worst week of her life. And it's very, very, it really inspired me because, you know, that week, the worst week of her life, she had a 3-book deal with a publisher and lost it. She had a flare up of a medical condition. Her son was having a mental health crisis. And she talks really honestly about that experience. And I wasn't at the retreat. I didn't hear her speech, but I can imagine how beautiful it was just from reading the blog post about it. And, you know, some authors are starting to more and more talk about failure. And I think that's really important because, you know, if you only see the good parts of anything, you know, any sort of person on social media, whether it's a celebrity or a friend or an acquaintance, you know, we tend to only talk about the good things and share the good things. And that is fine. Like, nobody wants to really go and be depressed by, you know, your social media feed. But it is important to keep it real. And so that people coming up can see that all the sides of this. You know, whenever I talk to authors, like pre-published authors, people who are trying to figure out, you know, their place in this industry, I try to make sure that I am real and that I talk about the difficulties so that they know, because that helped me a lot coming up when I was in workshops. And, you know, the author who was leading the workshop would give us just real information about the difficulties that were going on and not like super, you know, not always super personal, but giving you a heads up, like, okay, these are things that can happen. You need to watch out for this. You need to be aware of this. And so I kind of went in with my eyes open, knowing about things that could happen. And so at any stage, it's really helpful for people, I think, to open up about things, you know, whatever they're comfortable sharing, and talk about failure. And, you know, I just have to figure out how to speak about it in a way that I'm comfortable with, too. I usually am really open about when people ask me, like, I just gave an interview this week for this indie author group on Instagram, which I can't remember the name of. It's IAC, but I can't remember what it stands for, but I will link to it in the show notes because I don't remember anything anymore. But I was interviewed by another author, and it was an Instagram live, so it's gone now, but about being indie and then going traditional and being hybrid, and talking about people who are trying to figure out what path to take. You know, they're writing their book and they're not sure whether they want to go indie or go traditional, what my advice is. And in some ways, the idea that it's purely a choice is sort of a fallacy, because there's some level of being chosen to go traditional, which is why so many people go indie. You know, so the choice is pursuing this path, and then the choice becomes whether or not to give up if it doesn't go your way soon enough. You know, if you're going to go for an agent, it could take a year or more to get an agent. And if you get an agent, it could take a year or more to sell the book. So the choice for you at that point is, how long are you willing to wait? And what do you want out of your career? Like, indie and traditional, I see benefits and, you know, the pros and cons to both, because I do both. And I do actually like both. You know, I love having the control, and I love working with the publisher, even though there are things that have been really difficult with traditional publishing. And some of them I was aware of, and some things I didn't even know that could happen. So, yeah, it is a choice in some ways, but the traditional route is more a choice of how long you're going to go for it. And if you don't sell a book, are you going to write another one and go that route again? So the choice there is more about persistence and stick-to-itiveness. And the choice in indie is more about taking on everything. And how are you going to do that? How are you going to afford to do that with money and time? Keeping up with all the latest marketing trends, Facebook ads, BookBub ads, Amazon ads, and then paying for those. And so writing to market or not, your genre, like there's so many other things happening on that side that it's not a clear, it's like, oh, go indie, oh, go traditional. It's like, well, yeah, it's such a larger conversation. So it's, I feel like I'm always rambling when I try to answer the question because it's not a simple answer. If you really want to see your book in bookstores, people say go traditional, but there's no guarantee that your book will get into bookstores if you go traditional. Like bookstore space is at a premium. And then there's, digital only lines of traditional publishers. And if you want the control and the potential to make more money, perhaps you can go indie, but there's no guarantee that your book will sell and you'll make more money, even though you're getting 70% of the royalties, because it's so hard. They're both so hard. And so, yeah, the why. Like I talked in my very first podcast, knowing your why, knowing what you want goes into that a lot. And so I don't want to belabor it, but that was, and I don't know how I started talking about that. I've been in the sun for a few hours. So anyway, obviously I need to end this because I'm no longer making sense. So yeah, that's it for this week. And I will talk to you next week once I have turned in the book and had a day or two to revel in the glory of having turned in the book, and looking towards the next thing. I probably won't start anything new, and even thinking about it until next weekend or even the week after. Just give myself a few days of non-writing stuff and regroup, and then come up with a schedule for book four and whatever else I'm going to do in the interim, like a short story or one of these other mini projects that I would love to finish, that I need to finish, that were weighing on my heart. But I have to look at the calendar and my energy level to a certain degree, but really mostly the calendar, and work from there. So yes, that is it for me from this week. I will talk to you next time, and happy reading. For episode show notes and to learn more about me and my books, go to lpenelope.com. Subscribe to My Imaginary Friends wherever you get your podcasts, and check out the video episodes on YouTube. Please leave a rating and review to help support the show.